Engage fluo injectors.
Engaging fluo injectors.
Fluo reactors at 80%, sir.
Fluo containment field is destabilizing.
Emergency fluo containment protocols now. All hands brace for impact.
Brace for impact in 3, 2, 1.
Holy balls, we're back with another episode of World 1-1 Podcast. Real quick, tease for the third half of the show. This week, we are taking a dive down the warp pipe, and we are asking the question, why is gaming, the industry, the business side, gamers, the culture, why are we so goddamn resistant to new IPs, yet we always want to scream about we want something new? So that's after the break, so make sure you stay tuned after the break for the third half of the show. Real quick reminder, you can and should subscribe and share to the podcast. Coming soon, you will see new RSS feeds out, dedicated RSS feeds for all of the network shows. So what you're seeing, what you're picking this podcast episode up on right now, is the network master feed, and will continue to be the network master feed, but coming soon in the future, if you're just looking for this show or one of our other Armada shows, make sure you subscribe and share, and you'll be able to find individual feeds for just those Armada shows or the main show, the flagship show as well. Links to that will all be coming soon as all of that gets sorted and put up. I'm actually in the process of generating all of those and getting all of that together right now. And those are going to be super awesome too, because we're going to be rolling out old episodes of all of those shows from the beginning weekly up to current where they all are and have left off, as we look at, as we look into bringing back some of those Armada shows in a most likely a seasonal format as well. So subscribe, share, do all the internet content. Yeah, I threw up in my own mouth that word, but you know, do all the normal internet good things that you should do with stuff that you like this show. Also, in the links in or link in the show notes down below, check out our Discord, jump in, join the conversation. We'd love to chat with you. Shout out to our awesome sponsor, Imaginary Authors, helping you up your scent game. More about them just before the break. Let's get to the good stuff though, because
choose your fighter.
I am, as always, your host, Raul to the Wall. Joining me this week is my compatriot, Wes Evans.
My hair gets crazier by the day.
It does. Your hair is about to become its own cast member on this show, I swear to God. You're going to need a whole separate fucking IP and like recording setup for your hair. It's just going to be on its own separate screen. So, and eventually it's probably just going to go on to host its own Armada show. So let's dive in with...
Oh my gosh!
Video games.
Wes, what have you been playing? Are we back to Like a Dragon Yakuza?
Yes, we are. Finally. Okay. Took long enough.
We made it. Got it.
Similar to my gaming habits when I play Yakuza, I am very easily distracted.
Valid.
I'm playing through Kiwami some more. It feels weird bouncing around them because I'm going through Kiwami, Man Who Erased His Name, and Infinite Wealth every now and then. I probably should.
How is Infinite Wealth? Because it looks absolutely ridiculous.
It is absolutely ridiculous, and I love it. 10 out of 10. Game of the year every year. It's everything I expected. I probably should have played 7 before I got to that on my journey to try to get to it, because that was the other turn-based one and the one that starts off Ichiban's story. But We're coming back around to that one. There are only so many hours in the day, and like I said, I am easily distracted.
That's about so many hours in the day.
There's another game. I don't know if you've heard of it or not. It's a little something called Return to Grace. Someone recommended it to me, so I decided to give it a playthrough since it was on Game Pass.
You're number three.
I'm number three. I gotta tell you, I have no idea what else to call the genre other than walking simulator. It feels like the derogatory word, so I hate using that to describe them, especially when they're, you know, actually good.
But... So, I'm going to pause you real quick, because you and I were talking about this a little bit before the show, before we hit record at least, and I don't know if you saw, but I did add a couple of new topics to the topics master list, and one of them is... And I'd like to get to it in the very near future, especially considering we've got the interview with the studio behind Return to Grace coming up here in a couple of weeks. Looking at what walking sims offer in a unique sense that makes them potentially something not entirely video game and not entirely like TV movie. They exist in, and I'm realizing as I've played a few more, and Return to Grace, I think, is probably the best shining example of that so far. And I suspect we'll probably see more as time goes on. And there's probably a few that I haven't explored yet that do this well, too, is that they kind of walk a middle line between those two mediums that might actually be something entirely its own creature. But that's a forthcoming topic, and maybe that's what we do next week, actually, just before the before interview week. That could be a good lead up. So something to kick around. But yeah, no, I'm with you. Return to Grace very much kind of feels like the best of what walking sim can be, but in being that, it almost makes you wonder, are walking sims really entirely video games? But they do offer something I think that maybe neither medium does.
The number of walking simulators I've played and genuinely enjoyed, I can actually count on one hand. I know that because that number is three. Edith Finch, Artful Escape, and Artful Escape kind of doesn't count because it's a bit of a platformer, but there's no real challenge, so I call it a walking simulator. And now Return to Grace.
There's nothing that says that, like, I haven't done Artful Escape yet, but if it's platformer in the way that I think you're meaning it, is it like 2D side scroll?
Yeah, and you do from platform to platform.
I don't see a reason why walking sims can't be 2D side scroll. Maybe that's something that the genre will further explore. Should further explore.
I would absolutely love if it did that, because the 2D art style is a big reason why I liked Artful Escape.
Mm-hmm. But anyways, not to throw you completely off the rails here. Return to Grace. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. This is one of those funny stories. So I almost gave up on it, not because the game itself is bad, but because I don't think I was in a good headspace when I first played it. I just finished a long shift at work playing a game in a style I don't normally enjoy, you know, not exactly my style comfort game. I'm like, man, this is overrated. Then I was like, you know what? Get some rest. You're off tomorrow. Pick it back up. I did. So glad I did. The story really picks up. I think part of the reason why the story picks up in the second half is because at that point you've gotten all the characters or all the different AI voices. I had just met Jack and not just met Jack, but not long after I met Jack is when I called it for the first night. And so after that, you know, got to hear all of them talking together. Of course, everyone hates Control, but we love to hate him.
Yeah.
Everyone except LeGru. LeGru loves Control.
Yeah, I've been playing a little bit of that, but we'll get to that. But no, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you checked it out. I'm totally with you. Like, being in the right headspace for the right kind of game is absolutely totally a fucking thing.
Yeah.
So, and I had a rather foul day earlier this past week, and all I wanted to do was come home and find a game that I could get into just like a flow state with and shut off my brain and just keep my hands busy. It's right game for the right state of mind. It's a thing.
And two more I've got. One I've been playing because it's from the same developer as Return to Grace, The Veil, Shadow of the Kingdom. Mm-hmm. This is one where you play as a blind character, and the only visuals you see on the screen are these tiny little dots that just kind of float around, whose sole purpose is basically to let you know if you're moving or if you're standing still. There is no outline. There is none of that. Everything you do, you have to do from audio. So you have to know the timing of enemies' attacks. You have to listen for, say, the lute of a bard to go to the inn, or the chime of a bell to get to a shop or something like that. All of the text that does appear whenever there's text, it always has the text to speech over it so that someone's reading it. They legitimately designed this game so that a blind person could play it. Okay. From the ground up.
There's been a few games like that, and if I remember right, 20,000 Hertz has talked about that some. But I, off the top of my head, one comes to mind from way back on the 360, like, super indie days. And I'm not talking like Castle Crashers and Braid Indie. I mean, like, the low budget, we barely scraped together a game indie. And there were some really good ones in there, don't get me wrong, but you had to dig for some of them. But there was one where the whole game was, you were basically dumped in a pitch black dungeon with a creature that wanted to eat you. And the only thing that you had to work off of was the vibration of the controller and the audio and the direction of the audio to try and feel your way around this pitch black screen, this room, this space, and not get fucking eaten.
I want to know what this game is. I'm looking at it. I'm trying to Google stuff to pick it up as you're describing it.
But as far as I know, it's locked on the 360. Which sucks, because I've run into recently a handful of games that are locked on my 360 that I've been wanting to play again. The Dishwasher Dead Samurai in particular has been one of those that's made me almost hook up my 360 again just so I could play it. But I'm really kind of wishing that it would just be ported to something else, because it was fucking excellent. Actually went to the movies last night and saw Monkey Man, and there were a few vibes in Monkey Man that actually kind of reminded me of Dishwasher Dead Samurai.
I wanted to see that this weekend, but GG is out of town. I might see it next weekend, but there's a convention in town, and you know, one, only have so much time; two, only have so much money.
Agreed. But yeah, if you get the chance, go see it. It was absolutely solid action flick. The plot's pretty straightforward, but overall, really, really good time. Zoe and I both enjoyed it thoroughly. So there's a solid recommendation for you.
And one last game for whenever I need just one run. just one run is Balatro. I got bit by the Balatro bug, and the just one run syndrome with that game is very real. I'm not nearly as good as some of the YouTubers who play this game are, but today I got a hand that beat 50 million points, and I am very proud of that.
Nice. So most of what I haven't gotten to play a whole ton this week, but much to my surprise, considering I was grumbling about it with Riker last week when we recorded for Games of the Week, I did actually get to sit down and play some Pepper Grinder, and it's really good. It's a lot of fucking fun. It's got kind of a cutesy alt-girl pirate punk aesthetic vibe feel to it, and I'm really digging it. The big crux of the gameplay feels like they took the burrow mechanic from Ori and the Will of the Wisps and said, let's build a whole game around this. And that whole concept of let's take this singular mechanic, dial in on it, figure out everything we can do with it and what we can attach to it for unique ideas and gameplay took me back and reminded me very heavily of Flint Hook. And it's not just that, but the other thing that really brings Flint Hook to mind is if you told me that this took place somewhere in the same general universe of Flint Hook, it wouldn't feel wrong. Because, and I mean that in the way that, like, the SteamWorld games are all in the same universe, but they're all in different places and times in that universe. And that they all play totally differently. They all have a central mechanic and design that are different from one another, but they are all somehow cohesive in that universe. And Pepper Grinder feels very much like that with Flint Hook, even though it's not. So take that for what you actually was. Flint Hook Devolver? Holy shit. This is just dawning on me. Flint Hook might be Devolver, which could technically put them in the same, like, collected tribute. No, that was Tribute. Never mind. Not Devolver. But man, it fucking feels like it. Flint Hook definitely has a certain early Devolver feel to it. But anyways, so Flint Hook, fucking awesome. The other thing that I've been sitting here thinking about while playing Flint Hook is this feels like this would have been right at home in the mid to late stage days of the 3DS. It's got that super pretty pixel art style that a smaller screen would sharpen up real nicely, and this would look gorgeous on my 3DS XL. Add into that a little bit of depth and layering on the visuals from the 3D. I'm like, ooh, that'd have been choice. That said, 3DS is dead. Long live the 3DS. But I've got Pepper Grinder finally. It's out. It's really good. It's not pricey either. Like, this is one of those indie games that you'd see a trailer for and go, yeah, that's going to be 20, maybe 25, but 15 bucks. Solid, comfortable, under 20. Well worth the 15 bucks. Rock solid. And this, even though it's out on other things, it absolutely feels like this is one of those very well-polished indie games, like indie retro, that is keeping the Switch chugging along even this late into its life cycle. It's games like this that make me look at the Switch and go, yeah, no, that's got plenty of life left in it, not dead, not collecting dust. So take that for what you will, but I'd put a solid recommendation on Pepper Grinder. It's a good time. Zoe's actually been poking at it and enjoying it thoroughly too. There is a demo out. The girlfriend actually played the demo, said it'll let you play the first like three stages, I think, which is still reasonably immediate. It's enough to get your feet wet, get a feel for it, and probably just enough to make you go, yeah, I think I want to buy that and feel good about it. So, but Pepper Grinder's been the big one on my list. Other than that, a little bit of bouncing around, dabbling with a little more control. Not huge progress on that front since last recording. Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's where my gaming's been at the last week. So let's wrap up the first half of the show. Take a moment, shout out our awesome sponsor, Imaginary Authors, helping you up your scent game with phenomenal fragrances for guys, gals, and non-binary pals. Now you can get your favorite fragrances not only in cologne and perfume form, but also perfumed oils, candles, and bar soaps, all of which awesome. I've picked up the candles, I use the bar soap. 10 out of 10 recommend on both. Cannot say enough good things about anything and everything that I have ever gotten from them. So check out Imaginary Authors, link in the show notes down below. They are there for you to help you up your scent game. All that said, let's jump to the break. And we're back with the third half of the show. This week we're taking a deep dive down the warp pipe.
Oh wow.
And we're looking at why is gaming so goddamn resistant to new IPs, and we're looking at both gamers on the playing side and industry on the development publishing side, and maybe by the time this is done we'll have resolved the chicken or the egg question here of why is gaming so goddamn resistant to new IPs, because I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little bored of playing the same series over and over, maybe the same five series.
I mean, are you bored with it, or are you just like, I would argue that, like, Zelda, for example, kind of is a new IP a lot of times. They do a few games and they change it up. But like, what kind of games?
Mario's more of a new IP every time than Zelda is.
Yeah, we haven't had, like, a mainline Mario game. But you're talking about, like, even, like, with Wonder and all that, right?
Yeah, I mean, Mario, God, you apply his face to, they apply his face to everything. But there's so much, there's fucking puzzle games and sports games and racing games and platform games.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
I mean, he is their mascot. He is like,
and I get that, but I mean, Jesus, I would really love like a new setting and a new cast of characters just more frequently than we get them in gaming. You know, it's, and when we do get them, they never seem to do as well as they should for the most part, or as we'd like them to. And so, you know, you've got the chicken and the egg issue here. You know, who's to blame? Where did it start? How, you know, can it be fixed?
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about the business side maybe first. That might be,
I know that side's very much your cup of tea, so let's start there. Fuck it.
Yeah, I mean, the business side of it is IP is expensive, and making a game is expensive. AAA game can go $200 to $300 million in development or more, and then marketing it, you double it, so you're talking about like $500 million. And so publishers, I have little firsthand knowledge on this, but I know it, they're resistant to change because they want the sure thing, they want their money back at least. Yeah. And what they're really looking for is like 5-10 times their money, but they're not going to get that. They're going to get probably double it with it being so expensive. Now you get something like Pal World that just came out, which is a new IP. I would say new IP. $6.5 million to make. made 345.
It's a new IP on what a lot of people assumed right. was a familiar, safe formula, which right. obviously it wasn't necessarily that either, but...
Right, but it made $345 million. Mm-hmm. So that's what the publishers are looking for. They're looking yeah. for... They can spend like $10 million and make like $300 million back. Now, that doesn't happen all the time, obviously. So that's why I think IP resistance on the publisher side is because the developer side is not... The developers probably have a desire to do it. They probably have like a want to do it creatively, but they can't get the funding for it. So they're looking at like, because when you go pitch these things, you're pitching them to people who just, they don't care what you're doing. They just want
to
make
money.
You're
pitching it to bean counters.
Yeah, you're pitching it to bean counters and to people who just, they don't care. And I've been in those meetings. They just want, they literally like, you can go over the whole pie in the sky idea. There might be like one person out of five that actually kind of cares about that. And then the other four are just like, how much money am I going to make on this?
Mm-hmm. What's and the it's ROI?
And it's a numbers game for them. So they'll invest in like 10 things in a year. Six of those things are not going to hit. Four will. And just how much money do they make?
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad. It really is. It starts boiling it down. But that's exactly what happens. So, I mean, from my perspective, that's the business side of it.
Riker, you want to hit on the... On the we're playing this side of it?
No, why? Hit on something else. My thoughts on this are, what about quality maintenance?
Yeah,
well,
what comes
I think
to mind
some of that might tie back to the business side, but keep going.
Potentially, but you know, I think it was this past year, Disney actually, I think the copyright...
Oh,
like,
was it... Are you thinking the Dreamlight Valley thing? Oh!
Yes, it tie it back. But yeah, anytime a copyright expires, the public, the general public, the internet,
public
takes
domain.
That thing and they trash it. And, you know, us as consumers, we've come to expect a certain level of quality, whether it be Nintendo, Disney, Bethesda.
Well, have we? Because I've seen what gets popular and what sells, and I don't know that that's necessarily synonymous with quality, but go on.
Well, I mean, imagine if you bought a Mario game that you just saw at Walmart without that protection, right? And it's not actually even the thing. It's some cheap copy that they just slapped Mario's face on. You're not going to enjoy that game. The quality isn't there.
No, but I know at least most of us know how to look and see who fucking made it.
Yeah, but like if you were a kid, you know, if you're like a 10, 12-year-old kid.
That's the land of knockoffs, too. Like, like you'll see, like, I remember seeing stuff when I was a kid that I thought was legit, and it's not. But you would take advantage of the person who actually owned that. They take advantage of, like, Nintendo, for example. That's why Nintendo's so litigious. Because they don't want their IP trashed. I don't know if that's the reason why they're resistance to new IP. I think the resistance, a lot of it happens on the gamer side too, because like you're saying, and I think what you're trying to tie it to is like, you know what you're getting when you see a Mario game. Like, you're getting a high quality product.
Yep.
So if I put another face on it, but it's not, but it's exactly like a Mario game, but it's not a Mario game, is that in your, yeah, is that the resistance? You're like, I don't really know, you know. Like when I was a kid, like the only thing I could go by was the box. So I was looking at the box. And I mean, maybe had one friend that played a game, or we'd buy games blindly, and then it would just be like, it was a real crapshoot, you know? Mm-hmm. That's where renting came such in good handy for me, because I had no money. I might have $3 I could scrape together for a weekend to get a game, you know? See if it was any good. I don't know. Raul, what do you think? Because the creative side happened, like the gamer side is real for this.
Yeah. I think that there is an issue on the player side of complacency, for one. If this was a new phenomena in the last handful of years, I would say there's an economic side, but it's not new in the last few years. That said, I think the economic side has probably exacerbated it some more.
And I wouldn't even say economic side, like for a gamer. You can go on YouTube now. You can watch a review. You can watch gameplay. You know what you're getting before you buy it. Yeah. If you really want to, mm-hmm. you can know what you're getting.
I think another thing, too, is that there's an issue on the consumer side that ties to something in between those two, which is the press and media side.
Okay.
And a new IP, unless a big enough press junket takes an interest and really pushes it, it's not going to get the visibility or the attention or the hype to drive it to success that something else will. Because if somebody at, say, IGN looks at a new IP and says, yeah, I don't think this is going to get clicks, well, let's not write about this, or let's not do a video about this, then, you know, it's not being pumped out there preemptively to spin up sales. And Lord knows, rule of thumb, not hard and fast rule, but rule of thumb, when a game comes out, you know, those first few months are critical, because that's going to be the bulk of the sales, and it's going to tail off and not spin up over the lifetime of that game. It's just not, you know, there's right. a few rare exceptions where, you know, something has broken that
slow burn.
Vampire Survivors was one. Among Us was another. But, you know, those
are another one. Like, those games kind of, yeah, Control, like a lot of Remedy games okay. have a very slow burn.
Okay. Well, they may have a slow burn, but do they ramp up as opposed to just having a longer tail?
Oh, I would argue that the, like, Control was probably the first, and Alan Wake for Remedy actually did ramp up once word of mouth started getting out there. But
right.
that was probably their fault too, for not wanting to, I mean, they didn't have the money to spend on marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a problem too. I mean, it's a lot of economic issues, I think.
But on the economic side, that, you know, I think is exacerbated in the last few years, the price of games has gone up another $10 a pop, basically. And, you know, that's,
I mean, have they really though? Part. I mean, I know physical money, they've gone up, but I know this argument comes up all the time. Well, when there was a cartridge based game, but like I paid $85 for Turok. Mm-hmm. I paid $100 for Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah.
And if you
and we were buying blind.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I also there was fewer gamers back then. So, and the cartridges are more expensive. But if you took that money from Turok to today, that's like $200.
Yeah. Look at it in the scope of the most recent 20 years, though. We scaled from 50 to 60 to now 70.
Right. But like I said, if you look at it from like the inflationary point, that $10 has just gotten eaten up in the last year and a half of inflation. So really, it's not even like it's raised at all.
Kinda. Yes, but no. Inflationary, sure, but the problem is that a lot of the consumer market, the prices have gone up, but the income hasn't gone up to match either, right. though. And so, yeah, it might scale with inflation, but when the paychecks aren't keeping up with that inflation, it's still got more expensive.
And that always happens.
It's more cost prohibitive.
Yeah. That always happens with inflation. I know it sucks, but it's always the wages trying to catch up to what things cost, and they don't ever really totally catch up.
Which brings me to another thing that I think plays a part in it. We have lost the middle tier of game releases.
Like you're talking about like double A.
I'm talking like double A to B list.
So,
you know,
what would be some of those games?
Let's go back to the GameCube, Xbox, and PS2 gen. That was a great time for this kind of shit. Like, that was the golden era of, like, B-list, double A. Because I could walk into the game shop, and I could find dozens of titles that weren't, like, big AAA or, you know, shitty $20 bullshit But in that sweet spot of like $30 to $40 where we were testing this out, this was a new IP. We're testing it out. We think it's right. pretty decent, but we're not going to ask you to gamble a full AAA budget price tag on this. Shadow of the Colossus, God of War, fucking Phantom Dust, maybe on the low end of the spectrum, Future Tactics, The Uprising. You know, there were gobs of this stuff at the time, and that's all gone away. Now, that said, there's a little bit that's kind of replacing it, where you're getting into the higher end spectrum now of indie, because some of the higher end spectrum of indie is dipping into that price range, and we're even seeing it in some of the more recent stuff, like The Witness is one that stands out to me, because I'm like, his last game was $20. This is $40. Like, what? And I would be lying if I said I didn't hesitate at least a little when I saw that price tag before I pulled the trigger on it, you know, a number of years ago.
Right.
Which at that point too, you know, indie had kind of set the precedent that, yeah, we're going to kind of cap this at like $25. And it was just kind of an unspoken agreement. And then a few games started to break that and say, no, this is bigger than that. It's not this big, but it's bigger than this. And they started regenerating that a little bit. But you also don't see those games in the same row on digital storefronts. When you're browsing, you don't see them on store shelves. When you're browsing, you see AAA safe same IPs pretty much across the board. Yeah. You know,
and I think we're the still modern
cranking out fucking Call of Duty and Need for Speed.
Oh,
and
yeah, of course.
Madden year over year, you know, to the point where we have literally annual titles that we expect every year, and it.
I know. I know it sucks. It sucks. And I think a part of the reason, too, is that everything costs so much to make. And so the return on investment has to be enough. And there's just not the number of people that are buying these things to support something. Unless it's made by a really small group of people, like, I would say, five or less, where they're taking a shot in the dark. And they're just trying to, you know, if they sell 100,000 copies, that's enough for them. But that's not like a lot for anybody in any kind of sphere. And so, I mean, they got to live too. And when you think about a game might take 5 years to develop.
Oh, yeah.
It's a long time. And also, I feel like the AA, that space you're talking about, was kind of like Embracer Group was trying to do that. They were sucking up all these IPs and all these little things like Destroy All Humans. You know,
that was another one, yeah.
They're sucking up these small companies that have these IPs. And it's failing for them because they just grew too big and they couldn't get secure capital because these games, they had like something like 57 games coming out and they were in the $30 to $50 price range, I would say, you know, $30 to $45 or whatever, but they just weren't hitting enough to make their investment back. And I think that's where the problem lies. A lot of it. And now we're seeing these mass layoffs across the spectrum because of a lot of this stuff, I think.
But yeah, I don't know. It feels like there's numerous, I won't say moving pieces and parts to this, but there's definitely several components that have just gentrified the
game. I would love to hear
a lot of people getting priced out, and there's a lot of new IPs that are getting priced out of existence. You know, and granted that's where indie comes in, but the bitch of it is I'm like, you come in with something that isn't small scale and retro styled, and you want to tell that story in a video game, and you need a bigger budget to do it than, you know, than what you get with something indie, that's a hard sell because it's not safe. It's new. It's not tested. And these publishers are just dropping so much money into all of it that if it's not safe, they're not going to park their money in it and gamble it. So, and I think there almost has to come a point where
there's going to be a reckoning
where the safe gambles aren't safe anymore.
And here's what I feel is going to have to happen for that to happen, Raul, mm-hmm. is that gamers are going to have to, we collectively are going to have to adjust our expectations.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to have to say, you know what? It's okay if this game is not completely open world and I can go in every fucking building and I can do all the things and I can, yeah. I want it to look like, you know, the prettiest game I've ever played. Because we're going to have to say, like, what are we willing to sacrifice to kind of allow the developers the right amount of time to do the game correctly, but also be like, and I think there's games that hit that sweet spot. There always are. Like, a lot of Remedy games hit that for me. Like, you can't do everything. They're not completely open world. They look good. They have a good story, but they're lacking a little bit, but it's okay because the gameplay and everything pulls it through. Now, something like Dead Cells is another thing. Like, there's a lot of problems with that game, but it's just fun to play. And so if you, and you're willing to, like, put a lot of,
I'm real curious, what are your problems with Dead Cells?
Well, I mean,
what are the problems with Dead Cells?
I think Dead Cells has become, it might have actually become a little unwieldy, honestly, for a lot of people to even start now. But in my mind, if I, like, I don't have, like, main problems with it, but I'm saying I know people that do. They're just like, I just can't get into it. It's too hard. It's like, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, well, that's not the game for you. But
I say that smells like they picked something in the wrong genre with being a rogue. Exactly. But, you know, that's
fine. It's another here than there.
Right.
But I like the game. I mean, I love the game. And I know that now they got expansions upon expansions. Just like Shovel Knight.
Fuck that, and Hollow Knight was how you and I found each other.
Yeah, exactly. And I love Hollow Knight. And I spent way too much time on that game for how far I got in it. I mean, I completed the game, but I was like, I'm not good at that kind of game. And so, like, I understand that. Those are kind of the issues. But that game, they knew what they wanted and they hit it. And then any kind of, like, art direction or things, they could have polished it more. You know, Silksong is something that, like, hopefully we'll see sometime this year sometime. But, you know, like, maybe they're trying to hit it too high, right? I don't know. You know, we have to see some of this stuff. And I think that as gamers, we just going to have to give a lot of grace to these developers. Like, making games is freaking hard. I talked to a couple of developer friends, and they're just like, man, we're putting all these hours into these games, and people just shit on us. You know, it really takes the wind out of the sails.
Hellblade's another modern double A.
Exactly. Now they're scooped up, so we'll see what they look like. But, no, you're right. Hellblade was great. It was a great game. Scope was small, though. Like, it wasn't it had puzzles. It was very samey combat, and the puzzles were kind of the same throughout.
That was worked a great, for what they were doing, too.
It was a great story, and that's what I'm saying, is that we're going to have to adjust our scope. Like, be like, well, this is what we're willing to accept. If you hit these things, it's okay. But now it's like, everybody is like, what game, like, why isn't it bigger?
Hellblade told a story that fit those limitations, though, that those limitations became an asset and not a restriction.
And I think that's the balance. So you're going to have to find the right story, the right way to tell it in the right way to hit that balance, that it satisfies everything, and any shortcomings you can just let go. You know, instead of trying to brute force your way to a success.
Yeah.
Finesse your way to the success, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, you know, like I said, there's examples out there. God of War was one of them. You know, that was a series that Sony tested out at a $40 price point instead of $50 and rolled it out. It did well, and that's now a main pillar of their IP stable.
Yeah, you
know, that's a tentpole franchise for them, and I really think that we should be seeing more out of that, or more of that out of the AAA publishers and developers, or not even necessarily the developer, but the publishers. The publishers should be finding more of these projects, taking them on, funding them, and bringing them out at that mid-range price point, and then cherry pick the ones that do well and grow them. And the ones that, you know, just break even, give them a second run, little refinement, keep it at that mid-range, and you may have a good mid-range, you know, property to keep in that range too. I think there's value in that a lot of these companies just discard, you know.
Yeah,
it's a thing that should be more prevalent. There should be tiers of properties, because the thing is, with a mid-range IP in your stable that you plan on keeping mid-range, that's something that you could maybe do either with more frequency or less budget and still, you know, make a respectable return on investment for that. And you can take a little bit of that profit and use it to fund some other things even. As long as you know it's reliable, it doesn't have to be a fucking sports car, but it doesn't have to be a jalopy beater piece of shit. Just solid, reliable four-door sedan.
A Camry.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
That's exactly what, and none of these publishing houses want to park a Camry in their fucking driveway.
No, they want the Mercedes or the BMW or
yeah,
the Land Rover, you know?
Mm-hmm. But the thing of it is, look at the Camry. That shit sells like nobody's business, because you know what? You can do a lot with it. Like, if you give a shit, you can do a lot with it. That's versatile.
Yeah, it's a Switch, that, you know?
Yeah.
The Switch is, like, not... It's not flashy. Doesn't have, you know, it just works. It's, by this point, it's really slow. But it's still selling software hands over fist because of the IP.
Yeah.
And everybody knows Nintendo is the best IP on the planet, and they do not put their IP anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So it does boil down to IP. It boils down to content. That's what it boils down to. And
yeah,
I think we as gamers have to be willing also to take risks a little bit ourselves and try that game that is you're not really sure about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not saying drop, you know, $100 on it, or, you know, or whatever, but when it goes on sale, try it. And then if you like it, say stuff. No, go ahead, Rick. I'm sorry.
Well, like
I would say evangelize.
Make that a little bit less risky.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't, you know, I played a game that I wouldn't have ever purchased, you know, this week because it was on Game Pass, so why not? Let me download it, see if I like it, see what's up with it. If I don't like it, no harm, no foul.
That's what I love about mm-hmm. Game Pass, and I think that this might be the answer to some of these questions.
Mm-hmm.
Someplace you can try games that you would not normally play. Because I have done that with Game Pass myself, where I'm like, I would not normally download this, but I'm going to give it a try. And I really enjoy it.
Yeah, and for someone like me that plays more indie games, it really is great. Because with indie games, you never know. It could be trash.
Agreed. Yeah. I will say, though, if you know where to keep an eye on or keep an eye out, you'll know what you're getting into with most indies. There are some really good resources out there, and I'm going to shout out one, Get Indie Gaming, two, Nindie Nation, three, Game Makers Toolkit does some good stuff in that space as well. You know, those are really good ones to keep an eye on. Are they comprehensive and all-encompassing? No. but they cover a whole fucking lot. And they cover a lot more than most in that space. So those are good resources to watch. This also kind of dips into something else that I think is going to be a future topic, is we should be bringing back the rental. And I'm not talking Game Pass, which Game Pass kind of dabbles.
I know what you're talking about.
I'm talking the fucking rental. And look, those stores are gone. But the thing is, we could be doing it better.
We can also be doing it digitally. The video side of,
exactly.
And I know there's a way to do it.
The digital side is already on it.
There's a way to do it. We can do it digitally. We just have to have a code for DRM. And then if you want to give it back, the code is expired.
Yeah.
And that's just what it is. And I know that everyone gave shit to Microsoft in 2013 when they talked about trading in digital games. But this is what they were talking about. We're going to give a
We've talked about trading in digital games. We've talked about a secondhand digital marketplace on here before.
It can happen. It's just that it's the way that a publisher could get residual over and over, you know?
Like, so if I can pay $10 to rent a $60-$70 AAA game for 2 or 3 days, I'm way more likely to do that. And then if you want to get real fucking smart about it, put an incentive in there of you can, you know, if you didn't finish it, you can re-rent it. Or if you liked it, put that $10 rental fee towards a purchase price and just buy it outright digital.
Yeah.
If I spent $10 to rent the new, I don't know, God of War for a weekend, and I played it and I was getting into it, and I'm like, you know what? No, I would go back to this. I'm not done with it. And I'm pretty sure that when I am, I would play it again. Let me buy it for, you know, if it's a $70 game and I paid $10 to rent it, let me throw another $60 at it, and now I just own it. Done.
Yeah.
And
Game Pass kind of does that, but I know what you're saying.
It does, but it's limited in its scope because there's stuff coming and going off of Game Pass.
Well, it has to be limited.
Right, and that's fine.
Model works. Yeah.
Right, and I mean, Game Pass even kind of touches on that too, because basically everything that's on Game Pass, if you want to buy it and keep it, you get it at a reduced rate.
And you get it even, yeah, you're right. Yep.
You know, we're already doing this sort of with Game Pass and even with PS Plus, but this should just be bog standard, you know, and that's not too, I don't think that overcrowds or knocks out what Game Pass is doing either, because those are two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a difference between Netflix and going to Blockbuster. They weren't the same fucking thing. And there are trade-offs to either. You know, you go to Blockbuster or Hollywood Video or Family Video or wherever the fuck you went, if you went to the last Blockbuster in fucking Alaska, you know, you could go in and it wasn't just these are the handful. It's like, no, it's like going to the fucking library. You're going to find damn near anything you want. Versus Game Passes, we'll let you play, just keep playing anything that's on here as long as it's on here.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not going to tell you how long it's going to be on here.
That's true, because things do come and go pretty quickly there.
Yeah. You know, every month I see articles about what's leaving and what's hitting. So that's a whole separate episode at this point, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be a good supplement to our, you know, the old episode we did on a digital secondhand marketplace. Honestly, I think those two would dovetail very nicely together. So here, everybody's getting to hear some of the production behind the scenes side of things on air this time. But yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where I land on it. Anybody want to toss in final thoughts before we close this bitch out?
I just want to say I wanted to hear more from Riker. That was my fault. So
go for it.
If she has any more things to add, I would love to hear.
More from Riker on what specifically?
I don't know. Anything we talked about.
Oh.
Maybe you said it all and I just didn't like really pay attention.
But I mean, I don't know a whole lot on this topic, just because, like I said, I mostly am playing indie games, you know. I don't play a lot of big ticket games, so I've never really thought of the, you know, the IP aspect of it, but I think you guys really, you know, hit the nail on the head.
Okay. Well, we will definitely revisit this again, because this is an ongoing, like, evolving thing in the gaming world, so. Now that you're aware of it, I think you'll start actually listening, like, paying more attention to it.
I think this dovetails with another future episode topic that we've got, that you know, the is nostalgia holding gaming hostage? So I think that's almost a part two to this in a way,
probably. Yeah,
and I think there might be some of the root causes of what we're looking at here in that conversation.
Okay,
but let's close this out. I want to say thank you to all my friends for coming and hanging out with me this week. Thank you to everybody that tuned in and listened. Remember, subscribe and share with your friends if you liked this, and if you hated it, send it to somebody that pissed you off. Thank you to our awesome sponsor, Imaginary Authors, with fragrances for guys, gals, and non-binary pals, helping you up your scent game. And that's it for us. Say goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight.
There it is. That's better. You've been tuned to the World 1-1 Podcast on the World 1-1 Podcast Network. Press start to engage your mind. Peace!